Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, April 28, 2020. Local. Peyton, there is nervous excitement about reopening. Mayor says governor's plan resembles one created by West Texas leaders. By Stuart Doreen, historian at HearstNP.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said Governor Greg Abbott's plan to reopen the Texas economy mirrored the plan offered by seven West Texas mayors, and there is nervous excitement about the opportunity to get more of Midland back in business later this week. The governor's plan allows retail stores, restaurants, movie theaters, malls, museums, and libraries to open Friday at 25% capacity. As reported in the Texas Tribune, a second phase would allow businesses to expand their occupancy to 50% as long as the state has 2 weeks of data to confirm no flare-ups of COVID-19. I think it is a good place to start, Peyton told the Reporter-Telegram on Monday afternoon. Peyton said more information about implementing the plan in Midland will come from the county's Unified Command Team press events this week. He called Abbott's plan a mirror image of the plan created by the mayors of Midland, Odessa, Amarillo, Lubbock, Big Spring, Abilene, and San Angelo. In a letter to the governor, the seven city leaders noted agreeing on some important principles. Every business is critical in West Texas, and every business that can operate at low or mitigated risk should be operating. In mitigating that risk, each city should analyze its own local real-time data to surgically adjust its methods to mitigate the biological implications of the outbreak while navigating the economic implications of such mitigating measures. Peyton said increments of growth of 25% also were present in the mayor's plan. West Texans need it to be done, Peyton said. Peyton has made comments recently about the 1-2 punch Midland has taken with the coronavirus pandemic and the oil price downturn. He has supported the governor's previous executive orders, including the state's stay-at-home order, which will expire at the end of the month. Peyton also described his immediate reaction to Abbott's decision as nervous relief, which later became nervous excitement when talking about Friday. He talked about Midlanders wanting to get back to work and a community ready for their community to start back up. The Midland Health Department reported 74 confirmed cases in Midland County. That number was slightly fewer than the 76 in Ector County, but dramatically less than counties across the region and state. Harris County reported 5,729, and Dallas County was second with 3,014. According to Statistics Monday and according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. In West Texas, El Paso County showed the most confirmed cases at 802, according to the DSHS. Lubbock County was second at 499, while Potter County 333, Taylor County 222, and Randall County at 172 rounded out the top five. The Department of State Health Services reported Midland County ranked 40th of all counties in the state, despite ranking 26th in population. Peyton stayed true to the message he has delivered since the start of the pandemic. Midlanders have to be conscious of their own social distancing. He said there is a responsibility to work as hard when businesses are reopened, so the number of confirmed cases don't spike. The mayor said he will continue to walk in lockstep with the governor and not mandate wearing a mask. But he said there is a responsibility of Midland County residents to act in a way that doesn't harm them, harm their lives, or their neighbors. He also said businesses should have every ability to operate in a manner that they deem is safe. The following is a copy of the letter sent from West Texas mayors to the governor's office. Dear Governor Abbott, first, thank you for your leadership during this crisis. The weight of our state is on your shoulders, and there have been many difficult decisions made to protect Texans. We support you and we pray for you often. Second, we have heard you say that Texas is a state whose needs and solutions vary by geographic region. We agree and know it is vital to your leadership to hear directly from each region about its needs and solutions. As a region, we want to present you with our thoughts on reopening West Texas. Our cities have different needs and different approaches to address this crisis, but we agree on these important principles. 1. Every business is critical in West Texas. Every business that can operate at low or mitigated risk should be operating. In mitigating that risk, each city should analyze its own local real-time data to surgically adjust its methods to mitigate the biological implications of the outbreak while navigating the economic implications of such mitigating measures. Each of our plans will rely heavily on the fact that physical distancing is the most important component in slowing the spread of COVID-19. In rural West Texas, we want to reopen with strict physical distancing measures in place. Each city can best determine how to implement these measures in their own city. Our citizens are learning this new way of life and are ready to make changes that are necessary to go back to work. Many of the businesses in our rural communities are defined under state guidelines as essential businesses. They are operating with social distancing and increased hygiene practices. Businesses that are not currently open but that could adopt these changes, these same operational changes, should be allowed to operate as low-risk businesses. Where Texans can be safely working, we want them to work. Every business that can mitigate risk should be allowed to be open and participating in our economic recovery. Thank you for listening to the Voices in West Texas. We are ready to implement these changes and begin to reopen West Texas. Signed by the mayors of Abilene, Amarillo, Big Spring, Lubbock, Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo. MMH CEO, CARES Act doesn't cover lost revenue, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. A federal coronavirus stimulus bill allocated $5.2 million for Midland Memorial Hospital. But CEO Russell Myers said Monday that grant won't cover the hospital's total revenue lost from canceling elective surgeries, which is in the ballpark of $9 million. The money allocated to MMH was a portion of a $50 billion award to hospitals nationwide through the CARES Act. Each hospital's grant was determined in part by its Medicare revenue. Myers said Monday's press briefing, MMH had lost about $8.8 million in revenue since elective surgeries were canceled. Revenue was down by $2.8 million in the month of March and down by $6 million in the month of April. We continue to be optimistic that there might be some more money coming through federal assistance, Meyer said. The hospital has been hit both by a severe revenue decline and the high cost of purchasing supplies to care for COVID-19 patients. Midland Memorial's revenue declined by 20% in March after elective procedures were canceled, and hospital officials expect revenue for April to be down by 40%. He said they're projecting numbers for the month of May to be similar to March. As we begin in the middle of last week to do more elective cases, I don't expect for several weeks that we will be back to a normal elective case schedule. We continue to have concerns expressed by patients who are still anxious and want to stay home. There is also a delay caused by doctor's offices that have been closed. If patients cannot see their doctors, they aren't able to have imaging studies and other preparations necessary before surgery. We certainly are hopeful that if we stay on the course we're on now, then by the month of June, we should be close to a normal and regular schedule. But it really is early for us to determine. We can't know until we know. Visitation policies. Myers said even as the state reopens businesses and the hospital returns to doing elective surgeries, they're going to continue to be fairly restrictive about visitation. We're going to continue to expect our employees to wear masks when they are gathered at work, and to expect anyone coming into the hospital to put a mask on when they come in. These are common sense social distancing directives that we expect to stay in place for some time, even as the rest of the economy and the rest of local businesses reopen slowly. local. Some restaurants get ready to open Friday by J.C. Lewis. JACY.LEWIS at HearstNP.com. Governor Greg Abbott announced Monday that restaurants, retail stores, movie theaters, and malls can open with 25% capacity starting Friday. Midland restaurant owners Jerry Morales and Chip Height said they were starting to plan what reopening their businesses will look like. Height, the owner and chef of Opal's Table, started the Midland Relief Kitchen initiative when restaurants were told to close their doors under the shelter-in-place order. The nonprofit initiative provides free meals to first responders, medical workers, and others who might need a meal. We will run Midland Relief until it runs out of funds, which will be in about 8 to 9 weeks, and we will open our spaces for minimized capacity on Friday. He opened the basement below Opal's Table in December. The spaces should be able to seat 75 people. We will be open Monday through Saturday from 4 to 10. Seating will be available in all of the private dining rooms, basement space, and upstairs. Morales said that the Wadley Avenue Mulberry Cafe location and Gerardo's Casino will open for dine-in service on Friday. He said he is waiting 2 weeks to open the downtown Mulberry Cafe location. Morales had turned his restaurants into mini markets with carryout options during the shelter-in-place orders. Even though I will have the tables set up like normal, the tables that we cannot seat will probably put a special covering on their saying spacing table or designate it so it can't be seated. I'm sure some guests will be like, we're ready to come in and have a nice dinner with a drink, and we're wondering why you can't sit at that table because not everybody's aware of the news. Gerardo's Casita will have a capacity of 60 people under the 25% capacity rule in 4 dining rooms. He said they will be doing first-come, first-serve seating for at least the first weekend, and they will continue taking carry-out, curbside pickup, and to-go orders with alcohol to-go as an option until the governor lifts that regulation. Morales, president of the Permian Basin Restaurant Association, said it has been a central focal point to spread the message about what the state and local officials are implementing. He said he's been thankful for Midland and Odessa officials reaching out to the PBRA during this difficult time. This has been a really scary situation. Nobody was prepared for this financially, and it has put a huge struggle on everybody. We are very excited to move forward. I think it's just a matter of putting precautionary procedures in place. The PBRA partnered with Visit Midland and Shimmy Shack to create hospitalities. Proceeds from the t-shirts will be given to the PBRA to be distributed to Midland restaurants. Amy Harrison with Visit Midland came up with this great idea because she knew our industry was hurting very badly. I think today they've raised close to $5,000, if not more. There will be an application process that restaurant owners can fill out and will hopefully help some restaurants in that manner. Morales said the baby steps being taken by state and local officials are a good idea. He has ordered 1,000 masks, which will be available to servers and guests if they choose. The other thing I was thinking about offering is disposable utensils, paper plates, and cups. If the customer chooses not to use our regular flatware and plates, we will have that available. He said they will also be wiping down menus after each use and having employees open the door or wipe it down after customers enter or leave. His restaurants already did this, but not on a consistent basis. Morales said he is considering continuing the mini markets at the Mulberry Cafe locations because they are also delis. The mini markets were very promising and our guests really enjoyed it. I think we may do a little survey to see if there's some needs people have and they don't want to go to the grocery store. Morales said they have learned to become very creative during this process and the Restaurant Association is grateful for Midlanders. The Restaurant Association and restaurants in general are very excited and grateful for Midlanders in the Permian Basin because our carryout service has been tremendous. The ones that had mini markets, they have been using them, so it's been a blessing to know that your customers are your good friends and that they care about us. Wilson, Mask Use is About Science, Not Politics, by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstmp.com. Dr. Larry Wilson, Chief Medical Officer of Midland Memorial Hospital, said Monday his call for the use of masks to help stop the spread of coronavirus is not political. Wilson also said comments made since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic have been made to provide science-based information and to be apolitical. Wilson spoke to the Reporter-Telegram after another member of Midland's Unified Command Team, County Judge Terry Johnson, shared a Facebook post that stated, "If we all started wearing masks with Trump 2020 on them, how long before the experts decided we don't need them anymore?" Johnson told the Reporter-Telegram in an email about the post that he shared that it was political satire and nothing more. Wilson said Johnson has not approached him about the use of masks. He also said he thought Johnson has been spot on in what he has said during Unified Command Team press conferences about social distancing and other matters having to do with the pandemic. Wilson even gave Johnson credit for the Midland County Health Assessment Tool, CHAT chat program, that the county is using to collect more data on those with coronavirus symptoms. "I'm on board with that," Wilson said of the texting program. "I'm doing it and wanted to see what they were promoting to the community. I like it." Wilson told the Reporter-Telegram on Monday that the pandemic is rapidly evolving, and he has and will continue to provide his perspective on what the medical science shows. He said it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that social distancing has worked, and that it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that masks help prevent the virus from spreading. When asked about Governor Greg Abbott's expected reveal of a plan to get Texas's economy going again, Wilson repeated what he has said consistently for weeks. He said no matter if it is a plan from Abbott, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, or anyone else, the key is to do it smart. He said community members should maintain their social distancing, act in a responsible way for their own health and the health of others, be attentive to spikes in the number of confirmed cases, and be careful around individuals most at risk. The Midland Health Department reported there had been 73 confirmed cases heading into Monday. "It has not been a political message to anyone," said Wilson, who added that if the science changes tomorrow, so be it. County looks to reinstate By the Basin. Midland County Commissioners on Monday discussed reinstating the By the Basin initiative to encourage local entities and businesses to keep purchases local. County Judge Terry Johnson previously said during a Unified Command Team press conference that he wants to evaluate all purchases of products and services made by the county to non-local suppliers and switch to buying these locally if applicable. During Monday's meeting, Commissioner Randy Prude suggested broadening the initiative beyond the county's purchases and encourage residents who are business owners to follow suit. Johnson said he hopes adopting the resolution would set an example for residents. "I just know from here to the end of the year, we've got a lot of rebuilding, recouping to do. If the county could make the statement, and if that statement could affect the rest of the community, I think we would be stronger for it," Prude said. "That's the purpose of trying to bring this up and trying to be the spearhead of instigating this mindset." Johnson said growing up, By the Basin was the slogan he remembers Midlanders living by, and he'd like to adapt it to the current situation. Midland's economy was hit twice recently as businesses were forced to close during the coronavirus pandemic, and crashing oil prices led to a series of layoffs. "We buy Midland, and by buying Midland, we build Midland," Johnson said. A county purchasing official said the county already purchases most of its services and other items locally, but she supported adding more local vendors when possible. "Ever since I've been in purchasing, it's always been told to me, and I've always told my folks that these are the people who pay our taxes. Let's put money back into our own economy, boom or bust." The commissioner's court appeared to be on board with implementing the resolution, and Johnson said he would add a vote on the item to the next meeting's agenda. "I really want to see Midland start to heal from this, and the sooner the better," he said. Who's Ready for 100 Degrees by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen@hurstnp.com. The first 100-degree day of 2020 is in the forecast. The National Weather Service reports that the thermometer could show 100 degrees on Tuesday. It would be the first 100-degree day of the year and one of the earliest calendar-wise. The National Weather Service is calling for a 95-degree high on Monday, followed by sunny and hot conditions Tuesday. A high near 100 is expected again on Friday, according to the 7-day forecast. The record high for April 28th is 98, set in 1992. The National Weather Service also shows April 21st was the earliest date for a 100-degree temperature in Midland. The record for April 21st is 101, set in 1989. The first 100-degree day in June happened on June 8th. The Climate Prediction Center is calling for a 33% chance above average temperatures in May and a 50% chance of above average temperatures from May through July. Ector County reports 4 more cases. Total is up to 76. The Ector County Health Department website reported 4 more confirmed cases on Monday, making the total 76 for Ector County. There are 3 probable cases at this time. There have been 1,090 tests taken and 32 people have recovered. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has tested 655, and of those, 48 people have tested positive. MCH is treating 2 positive patients on the isolation floor, and there are no coronavirus patients in the critical care unit. There is 1 patient on a ventilator, and their test is pending. The hospital has had 579 negative tests come back, with 28 tests still pending. 6 patients are persons under investigation at the hospital, and 3 of those are on the isolation floor, and 3 are in critical care. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 268 with 13 positive results. 5 tests are pending. She said ORMC has no coronavirus patients in the hospital at this time. Ector County Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton will no longer be participating in the Zoom calls. Ector County Sheriff's Office spokesman Sergeant Gary Dusler will be acting as spokesman for the ECHD. MCH Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said. Ector County by the numbers. Confirmed cases, 76. Days since first case was confirmed, 21. Four more Midland Medical Lodge employees test positive. 24th resident also is a confirmed case. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. 4 employees at Midland Medical Lodge have tested positive for the coronavirus in Ector County, according to a press release from the Ector County Health Department. The employees are Ector County residents and will be counted among Ector County's confirmed positives, the release states. Midland Memorial Hospital officials were not previously aware of the cases in Ector County. CEO Russell Meyer said Monday. He said during a press briefing the confirmed positives are new cases. Also, the City of Midland Health Department is investigating another resident as a new confirmed case. The resident, a female in her 50s, brings the overall case count for Midland County to 74. She was tested by Medical Center Hospital and is on the Medical Lodge's isolation wing. The source of exposure is contact to a known case. The additional employees and resident bring the total of Midland at Midland Medical Lodge to 39 confirmed cases, 24 residents and 15 employees, according to a spokeswoman from Midland Memorial Hospital, who said the numbers were provided by Midland Medical Lodge. There have been 33 cases from Midland Medical Lodge reported by Midland County and 4 reported by Ector County. That leaves 2 cases unreported by either county's health department. It's possible those cases are employees who live in other counties.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, April 28, 2020. MCPL launches curbside pickup service. Midland County Public Library patrons have the opportunity to pick up books, DVDs, audiobooks, and other materials without leaving their vehicles with curbside service. Curbside service will be available 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Thursday at the downtown branch only. This new way to deliver materials allows the library to serve patrons with minimal contact while library buildings remain closed, according to a press release. Library employees will wear masks and gloves to deliver materials to patrons. Patrons may reserve materials using the library's online catalog or by calling 688-4331 or 742-7410. Requests may take up to 24 hours to process. Once an order is ready for pickup, the library will contact the patron via email or by phone. To pick up items, patrons must enter the parking lot from Missouri Avenue and follow the signs to the designated pickup area. Patrons will then call a number posted at the curbside area, and then staff will deliver the materials. Curbside delivery guidelines. Only one curbside order per patron each day. Limit 2 items per vehicle. There may be more than one library account for a vehicle's occupants, but the total number of items ordered must be 20 or fewer. Patrons' account must be in good standing to use curbside service. Reserved materials will be held for 3 days after patron is notified. Order is ready for pickup. After 3 days, the materials will be reshelved. MMH closes donation drop-off location. The daily drop-off location for donations at Abel Hanger Medical Pavilion has been closed. Midland Health is still accepting PPE donations. If someone wants to donate, email ppedonations@midlandhealth.org or call 221-1792. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. Albertsons Market, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., customer 60+. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60+, with disabilities or at risk. Today in History. Today is Tuesday, April 28, the 119th day of 2020. There are 247 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On April 28, 1967, heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali was stripped of his title after he refused to be inducted into the armed forces. On this date, in 1967, U.S. Army General William C. Westmoreland told Congress that, backed at home by resolve, confidence, patience, determination, and continued support, we will prevail in Vietnam over communist aggression. In 1994, former CIA official Aldrich Ames, who had passed U.S. secrets to the Soviet Union and then Russia, pleaded guilty to espionage and tax evasion and was sentenced to life in prison without a parole. 10 years ago, Coast Guard Rear Admiral Mary Landry said a massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico was worse than officials had believed, and that the federal government was offering to help industry giant BP contain the slick threatening the U.S. shoreline. 1 year ago, a shooting in Topeka, Kansas, killed a Washburn University football player, Dwayne Simmons, and wounded a former team member, Corey Ballantyne, who had been drafted just hours earlier by the New York Giants. Authorities said they were in the wrong place at the wrong time when they were shot outside an off-campus house party. Francisco Alejandro Mendez has pleaded not guilty to charges, including first-degree murder.
This is from the Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page, Our View. Take pride in leadership displayed during pandemic. We appreciate community leaders for the information they continue to provide to residents. Representatives from the hospital district, the city, county, and school district have put their community first and set an example that apparently other communities should follow. Communication and coordination by the Emergency Operations Center in response to the local COVID-19 outbreak has been an unmitigated disaster in Odessa, according to the Odessa American newspaper, which also in an editorial this weekend questioned who's in charge and if the county displayed a level of petty territorialism that would be nauseating if it were not so scary. There aren't similar complaints in Midland. Sure, not all residents agree with everything they hear from all participants, and some people wanted businesses open by now. Others have grown tired of the forced isolation that is a result of the pandemic. However, we can't question the leadership on display. It is that leadership that has led to regular updates from Midland County residents. Hospital officials are available 5 days a week. The entire Unified Command Team is available 2 days a week. The total number of hours our leaders, such as Midland Health CEO Russell Myers, Midland Health Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson, Mayor Patrick Payton, Midland County Judge Terry Johnson, and Midland ISD officials, typically either Superintendent Orlando Riddick or Chief of Staff Katie Atkins, have dedicated shows their effort to keep residents informed. As this community moves forward during the coronavirus pandemic, there might be changes. There might be fewer press conferences, but it is likely such changes will be consistent with the level of urgency that the pandemic requires. If someone, a member of the media or not, has a question for a leader at these daily events, event organizers are providing ample opportunity for those questions to be heard. Let's repeat that. Residents have had unprecedented access to every moment community leaders have stood in front of the cameras. They also have incomparable opportunities to participate in the dialogue. We look back at the recent times when our community has been at its best. Most successes have occurred when people at the top levels of government have been proactive in getting their message out, have answered all questions, have been transparent, and have provided information and answered questions during even the most uncomfortable situations. Those entities that have been the most successful removed all doubt about their intentions. That is how it has been in Midland during the coronavirus pandemic and how it should be moving forward. Obituaries for April 28th. H.A. Dauber, Dean. Known to most as H.A. or Dauber Dean, he passed away on Saturday, April 25th, 2020. Those left to cherish his love and memory are Stephen Dean and wife Lanelle, Danny Dean and wife Davida, Cindy Parker and husband Clint, Dale Campbell and wife Connie, and Patty Gonzalez and husband Joe. Sister Sue Nielsen. Graveside memorial services will be privately held at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences can be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Susan Riggs Brown, 64, a phenomenal woman, passed away on early Monday morning from natural causes. A memorial service honoring her life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to Saving Hope Animal Rescue at 5320 Camp Bowie Boulevard in Fort Worth, or at savinghope.org, or an animal rescue of your choice. Susan is survived by her husband, Mark Brown, daughter Ashley Brown Waldeck, and husband Adam, son Riggs Allen Brown, and wife Kelly, and grandchildren Jack Waldeck, Lizzie Waldeck, Riggs Brown Jr., and Lily Kate Brown, mother-in-law Twyla Ashley Brown, sisters Brian Riggs and Kathy Grella, nieces and nephews John Grella, Marguerite Gossett, Elizabeth Mitchell, and Will Grella, and their children. Death notices. Diane Louise Robbins. Diane Louise Robbins, 61, of Midland, passed away Friday, April 24th at her residence. Arrangements are entrusted to Ellis Funeral Home. No services are scheduled at this time. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Jesse Guevara Villa, 71, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Saturday, April 25th. Due to restrictions pertaining to COVID-19 rules, there will be a limited visitation at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home on Tuesday, April 28th. A private graveside service will be Wednesday, April 29th at Serenity Memorial Garden. He is survived by his wife, Yolanda Villa, his son, Jesse Villa, three daughters, Carol Vasquez, Maricela Gonzalez, and Roxanne Arredondo. Four brothers, four sisters, 12 grandchildren, and 20 great-grandchildren. Karen Gail Hendricks, 67, of Midland, passed away April 24th, 2020. A private family service will be scheduled at a later date with Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Survivors include brothers Terry Copeland, Coyette Copeland, and Roger Copeland. Moisei Kirilovich Kutsev, 46, of Gardendale, passed away on April 20th, 2020, in Gardendale, Texas. Service will be held in Minnesota. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Rosa Varela. Rosa Varela, 45, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Sunday, April 26th. Due to restrictions pertaining to COVID-19 rules, there will be a limited visitation at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, 405 North Terrell Street, on Tuesday, April 28th. A private graveside service will be Wednesday, April 29th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, Jorge Varela, a son, Jorge Allen Varela, daughter, Jocelyn Gisela Varela, and her mother, Guadalupe de Lau, two brothers and one sister. Travis Andrew Schreiber. Travis Andrew Schreiber, 32, of Alpine, passed away on April 24th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are being handled by American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. Front page, Council Appoints Pastor, by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council appointed a local pastor to fill the District 1 vacancy after former Councilman Malcolm Hamilton's unexpected resignation. 3 years ago, Michael Shelton Sr. was called to pastor at Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church in Odessa. Shelton said he was surprised to get the call from the mayor, David Turner, about his appointment. He said that he wanted to become a council member to help out in the community that he's a part of. He is also a member of the Southside Ministerial Alliance. I try to work within my community to enhance others to do better, he said. He said that when he got to District 1, he observed his community and heard that District 1 wasn't being represented correctly. Shelton said that as the voice for his community, District 1 can count on him as a listener. The main thing is to listen, to hear, to try to solve. We may not get things solved in a month or 6 months. It takes time. Hamilton's seat is up for re-election in November, and Shelton will be the temporary replacement unless he decides to seek the seat during the election. Council members unanimously voted for Shelton to fill the slot. The others who applied included Dustin Fawcett is the Vice President of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN. His application indicates he has lived in the district for 8 months. Terrence Collins Williams did not list a current job on his application, but was a former warehouse associate at AW Energy. He has lived in the district for 20-plus years. Jesse M. Porras listed various community organizations, but no current job was listed. He listed that he has lived in District 1 for 60 years. Eddie Mitchell listed he has lived in District for 21 years and that he owns Ed Tom's Barbecue. Michael Shelton Sr., pastor at Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church. Doctor, Wear a Mask, by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. During Monday's virtual briefing, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanen said that he doesn't think enough people are wearing masks in Odessa. It only works when everybody is wearing a mask, he said. The few that don't are going to continue to spread it. Sarvanen said that a mask mandate would be the best idea, and although Mayor David Turner is waiting for guidance from Governor Greg Abbott, he hopes that the guidance will include such a mandate. Medical Center Hospital Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said that 10 minutes before the meeting, he got an email from County Commissioner Eddie Shelton saying that he will no longer be participating in the Zoom meetings, he said. Tankersley said that the email from Shelton detailed that information being released by the Ector County Health Department will now be released through the Sheriff's Office Public Information Officer, Sergeant Gary Dusler. However, Duesler will not be the county spokesperson. Tankersley reported that there were 9 additional positive cases of COVID-19 over the weekend in Ector County. He reported that Ector County has 76 confirmed cases with 3 probable. He said that 32 people have recovered, 1,090 have been tested in total, and there have been 4 deaths. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that out of 655 tests, 48 have been positive and 2 are in the hospital. Tippin reported that 579 tests have come back as negative, 28 are pending, and 6 people are under investigation. 1 patient with a pending test is on a ventilator. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has conducted 268 tests, with 13 being positive. She said that 5 tests are pending and no patients are in the hospital. Mayor David Turner said that Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes decided to scale down on the EOC. During a phone interview with the Odessa American, Hayes said the reason for scaling down was because they had accommodated the needs of the hospitals in the way of PPE, ventilators, and plans for overflow patients. She said that the Emergency Management Center has gone all the way to a level 4, which is what the city operates at normally. During a phone interview, Turner addressed rumors that he was taking over for Hayes as the head of the COVID-19 response in the county. "She's still controlling it," he said. "We have talked about it, but after the article, I think that's when things started to change." The article Turner referenced was an Odessa American editorial from Sunday that questioned the lack of transparency coming from Ector County elected officials and the Ector County Health Department during the public health crisis. During a phone interview, ECSO Sheriff Mike Griffiths said that Hayes and the County Commissioner's Court had asked him to use the ECSO PIO Sergeant Gary Duesler to release COVID-19 information from the county and health department because Duesler has a lot of experience in public relations. "We'll get that information and relay it on our Facebook and via email to all the media outlets and do our best to help the flow of information get out to the public," he said. Griffiths said that Duesler is not going to be the spokesperson, but he will just be relaying the information that we receive. There was no health department or Ector County representative present during Monday's virtual public health briefing, and there was no word of who will be Ector County's spokesperson moving forward. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 76. Ector County negative, 914. Out of 1,090 tested with 100 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County, 74 confirmed out of 1,519 tested, 5 deaths. Texas, 25,297 confirmed with 290,517 tested. Total Texas deaths, 663. U.S. cases, 957,875 total confirmed and 53,922 deaths. Found out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. South Odessa Distribution. The West Texas Food Bank, 411 South Pagewood Avenue, has scheduled a South Odessa distribution from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. Participants are asked to be patient with staff since a large crowd is anticipated. Call 580-6333 or visit tinyurl.com/Y7P9F5CK. Sewell Leader Live. The Sewell family of companies will be wrapping up their Sewell Leader Live series with David Salyers at 10 a.m. Thursday at Sewell Family of Companies Facebook page, at Team Sewell, and at www.teamsewell.com/leadership. Salyers' message is titled, "The Upside to the Downside." Salyers is one of the original two marketing executives at Chick-fil-A. Having worked at Chick-fil-A his entire career, Salyers saw the principles of servant leadership and compassion play out in the growth of more than 2,300 Chick-fil-A restaurants around the country. From staff reports. Crisis Center of West Texas takes on sexual assault by Tony Venegas, T-V-E-N-E-G-A-S, at OAOA.com. The Crisis Center of West Texas reached a new milestone last week as the agency marked the one-year anniversary of the Louise Wood Angel House. The 16,000-square-foot shelter is double the size of the previous building and sheltered 265 survivors and children in 2019, according to information released in the April newsletter for the agency. So far this year, the agency has housed 110 survivors and children and provided services to 291 survivors through March, and Executive Director Lori Dunham said that having an expanded facility has made a world of difference in the current environment. The primary impact for the community has been no waiting list, Dunham said. Prior to this shelter being opened, we would have that waiting list from time to time. Domestic violence is an absolute emergency and a life-threatening situation, so we're able to save lives by not having that list. Dunham added that one of the additional benefits of expanding the shelter to its present capacity of 61 beds was to ensure all the survivors and children had their own private bathroom. The previous facility only had 3 community bathrooms for everyone to share, which meant having that extra personal space was more difficult to come by. "Every single room has that private bathroom," she said. "It's so much better and gives more dignity and room to recover in an environment when you're not confined as closely." Being able to provide that safe haven for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault has taken on an even greater importance during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dunham said that while the number of people needing shelter has remained steady, those that need services, such as counseling and case management, have increased. Dunham said that while the number of people needing shelter has remained steady, those that need services such as counseling and case management have increased. The agency stated that it saw a 37% increase compared to the same 3-month period in 2019. Looking ahead, the agency currently projects that if CCWTX continues to serve clients at the same rate throughout the year, nearly 1,200 survivors will walk through our doors in 2020. One of the challenges that Dunham is finding during the uncertain time is to make sure that those who need those services have the information available to them with or without technology. "The biggest challenge is the comfort level of the survivor," she said. "Not everyone has access to internet, or maybe they aren't as savvy with it, or they're just not comfortable doing something remotely." In order to bridge that technology gap, Dunham says that the agency has partnered with Meals on Wheels to provide information pamphlets to those who may not know about them. The agency has also taken precautions, like many other services and businesses have taken on in recent weeks, that include more staff working remotely. With more financial strain as well due to the pandemic, Dunham said the top priority remains to keeping the shelter open and encourages those who can to donate to the cause. We have done some creative things with staffing during the COVID crisis in order to keep our doors open, she said. Keeping the shelter open is our first priority. It is a large facility that takes a lot to manage. We have never interrupted our shelter services, and we continue to provide everything as we have before. There's a photo of jeans hanging on a line, and you can see the Crisis Center of West Texas sign. The jeans have markings on them. One marking is Consent is Everything, and another pair of jeans says She Was Drunk, a Hangover. Blue jeans displaying messages regarding sexual assault and consent are displayed in front of the Crisis Center of West Texas for Denim Day, which seeks to educate the public and show support for survivors of sexual violence. The Crisis Center of West Texas celebrated the one-year anniversary of the opening of the Louise Wood Angel House, which housed over 100 survivors of sexual violence, as well as providing services to many more. Ben Powell, Odessa American. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. Page 2, read. Running a Virtual Business by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, businesses all around have been forced to adapt to a different setting. Some have had to adapt to doing business through a virtual setting, and that includes machinery auctioneers. The Texas-based business was recently forced into a virtual bidding model for its machinery auctions. Machinery auctioneers did their recent virtual auction on April 21st. Due to the COVID-19, we can't have more than 10 people at a gathering, said President and co-owner Terry Dickerson. We usually have 200 to 300 people, and we have 5 different yards, some of which we do by an auction truck outside. Anyway, what we did for the virtual auction, we had yard in Odessa, and that's where we conducted the auction, from our auditorium. Dickerson said the virtual auction featured photos of everything that they had. We had pictures from all of the equipment trucks and everything we had for sale, Dickerson said. We had 2 online bidding platforms. People went online and bid while we were auctioneering live. Dickerson added that there were a few differences between this auction and a regular online auction. A lot of auctions on the computer are just online only, but we literally were auctioneering and people were bidding live simultaneously, Dickerson said. That was the difference between an online auction and a live online auction. The virtual auction ended up being a success, bringing in over $4.5 million in sales from over 2,700 buyers in 41 states and 8 foreign countries. We were shocked, Dickerson said, very shocked. But it worked really well. We have our yards and we just have lot numbers. And when you get on your computer, you see the lot number, the description, and the picture, about 6 pictures. You know what you're bidding on. But before the event, Dickerson said he was very concerned. I didn't sleep much Monday night, Dickerson said. We got up and we have some new marketing people working for us now, and I have to give them credit because we usually have about 1,000 people online, even when we have a crowd. We had about 2,600 people online from 41 states and 8 foreign countries. It was a lot. The prices, surprisingly, were really good. But the thing is, We did not focus on the oil field when we promoted this sale. What we did was we went after people in the construction business, farmers, ranchers, people who need trucks and equipments. Dickerson said they will be doing another virtual auction on May 19th. There's no doubt that people are right now laying off people and have been for the last 30 to 45 days, Dickerson said. There are some people who have way more equipment than what they need. I told them all, with the way this oil thing is going, the quicker you sell it, the better off you are. If this thing lasts much longer, more and more people are going to have to sell, and more stuff will be on the market. Follow Michael Bauer on Twitter @OAMICHAELBA. O-A, Michael B-A. SRSU Relief Fund established for on-campus students. OA Life at OAOA.com. Alpine. Sol Ross State University is expected to receive CARES Act funding from the federal government for emergency relief for on-campus student needs in an announcement made on April 22nd. A portion of the funding will also cover institutional relief programs. Processes for distribution are currently in development and will be published soon. In addition to the CARES funding, which will provide significant financial assistance to students, the university is also announcing the creation of a relief fund to assist students who are currently struggling financially due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our students may have lost jobs and find themselves struggling to purchase basic necessities, Yvonne Riala-Vasquez, Assistant Vice President for Administration and Development, said. The Sol Ross Relief Fund is one way that we can help address their immediate needs. Your gift will help Sol Ross students finish the semester and show them how much we all care about their success, she said. Currently, the university has $5,000 in matching funds, thanks to the generosity of donors. This will serve as an opportunity for donors to double their gifts to the Sol Ross Relief Fund, Kara O'Shaughnessy, Director of Advancement and Donor Relations, said. This is an amazing opportunity to not just help a student in need, but to have your donation matched up to $5,000. Proceeds will help purchase necessary items, including essential items like toilet paper, soap, food items, etc. Meals for students staying in the dorms and apartments, personal protective equipment, masks for those who need to leave their dorms, and other items that may be necessary to complete the semester. Lack of transportation has been problematic for some remaining students who may need help getting home at the end of the semester, and O'Shaughnessy said monies raised from the fund will help alleviate some of those issues. They're not able to get essential items in town or go home with the travel restrictions in place throughout the U.S., she said. That's where the fund can play a huge role in making sure these students won't lack the basic living items and they will still be able to concentrate on their studies. For more information or to make a donation to the Sol Ross Relief Fund, visit https://secure.touchnet.web/product_detd.jsp?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP?JSP
the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.